On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, it is an update of where Major League Baseball stands at the All-Star break. Games are back tonight, Friday night, so we're going to run through everything. The division races, the wild card races, the award races. We'll chat about everything that Rob Manfred said at the All-Star game, do the good, the bad, the ugly, and preview the weekend ahead. All that, and maybe a little bit more on this episode. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that can't believe Rangers reliever Chris Martin exposed that couple at his concert. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman, and it's probably the most interesting thing to happen in a Texas Rangers game this year.
Yeah, I would say so. Chris Martin and the Rangers bullpen. Chris Martin quietly, once again, having a wonderful season, and I'm glad he's back in the headlines. Good morning, Jake. It is good to see you on my computer. Much nicer to see you in person, as we got to do for a few days in Atlanta, but it's nice to see you on this Friday morning. We have plenty to talk about. The regular season resumes later today. Red Sox, Cubs, we don't even have to wait for the evening, as we've got some day baseball to get to. But a lot of fun stuff on this Friday show. And where would you like to begin, my friend?
I would like to begin by providing all of the people with an update on the baseball season. This is a perfect time to take a deep breath, take 2 days off from consuming the sport, and take stock of where we are at here in 2025, and that will be our opener. So this is also a valuable experience exercise for us, because when we're at All-Star, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we watch basically no Major League Baseball. And you said to me, I believe on Monday morning, the Brewers are how close? And so what we're going to do is fly division by division to tell you some of the best races that are going on right now across the league.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know what? Let's just start there. We don't necessarily have to go in order and start with the AL East, so we will obviously circle back. But as you mentioned, and we've said this a few times, like that last weekend, because we get to All-Star so early, we just don't watch a lot of ball. And so even on Monday, as we're, you know, getting ready for the Derby and reacting to the draft, you know, we pull up those standings, and there's definitely some things that catch us by surprise. And while the Brewers did not win quite as many games as the Red Sox coming into the break, the Brew Crew finishing the first half on a W7, just one game behind the Chicago Cubs. And not just one game behind the Chicago Cubs, but in the first NL wildcard spot. So they have passed the Mets, they have passed the Padres, they have passed the Giants. And now they are right on the Cubs' heels. And I got to say, this is the one I want to start with, because I don't know. I think this might be the division race I'm most compelled by. And maybe that's a crazy take, but I think, especially with how last year went, because of what the stakes are for the Chicago Cubs, and because we have the deadline coming up where we know that the Brewers, it feels weird to say that they're playing with house money, although it kind of felt like we were saying that last year with the team that really wasn't expected to defend their division crown. Now, I mean, I saw them in May, and I saw them in Cleveland, and I was like, I saw them at really their low point where they got shut out, I believe, over the first two games in Cleveland. They won that series finale, and since then, I believe they have the best record in baseball since about the middle of May. So this Brewers team's been hot for a while, and at this point, again, the Cubs got to be sweating a little bit. I mean, they still have the best run differential in baseball. I just ranked them number one in my power rankings. But yeah, what are you excited about in this NL Central race?
What's the opposite of house money? Because that's what the Cubs are playing with. You know, they're playing with their own money because the stakes are quite high for the North Siders. Like, if they don't make the playoffs, I think there's an overhaul in the baseball operations department. Kyle Tucker probably leaves in free agency. There's so much positive energy around the Cubs this season, with good reason. They're banging at the plate. The vibes at Wrigley Field are sensational, but there's still only a game up on the Brewers, and I think that says more about the Brewers than it does about the Cubs. But the outcome here is what's important, right? Intention does not equal impact. The Chicago Cubs need to win this division, and the Brewers are giving them a run for their money. So it is like the team playing with house money against the team with a lot to lose. The Brewers are really just a fascinating team. because their top four dudes by Baseball Reference WAR, like none of them are like hitting it at all-star level. It's Terang, Frelick, Contreras, and Caleb Durbin, right? None of the guy, like if you compare these two offenses, right? The Cubs rake and the Brewers are out there grinding.
Yeah, but like I will say that the Brewers, besides Joey Ortiz, who has just taken a massive step back, they don't really have that many gaping holes in their lineup either. I mean, the Cubs have a case as the best offense in baseball, so I agree. I mean, they're certainly far more intimidating from an offensive standpoint. But the Brewers have kind of raised their floor as an offense in a way that even last year, there were some like automatic outs. And I think that that's really impressive. We know they play great defense. We know they run the bases really well. And we know they're finding outs on the mound. But I'm just excited about it because I think that the Cubs were going to be in a position that they had to be aggressive at the deadline, regardless of what the Brewers are doing. But you could also see a scenario where they felt a little comfortable. And this is something, as we spin it back to the American League, this is something I'm fascinated with the Tigers. Because they have the biggest cushion in baseball, but I still feel like now's the time to go all in and push. But I think because the Brewers are right there, I do think the Cubs are going to have to be even more aggro at the deadline. And I'm curious to see how that manifests with Jed Hoyer kind of feeling the heat.
Who you got?
I think the Cubs will hold them off here. I don't think I picked the Brewers to make the playoffs. And at this point, I'm not feeling super awesome about that. But they are super impressive. And by the way, even if they don't catch the Cubs, the Brewers finishing ahead of the Mets or the Phillies or the Padres or any of these teams, that is also a remarkable achievement.
I picked them to win the division over the Cubs, which I feel pretty good about now. My thought process there was, in my mind, the Brewers had entered Astros territory or are entering it, where I don't really care the 26 people who are on the field, that the operation here is just such a well-oiled machine that they're going to win enough games to win the division. That looks to be the case right now. The thing that I think is the biggest separator here is the pitching staff for Milwaukee. Freddy Peralta, all-star, Jacob Mizorowski, all-star, Chad Patrick, Quinn Priester, Jose Quintana, all good behind that. And then the bullpen is outstanding. And I think that compared to the Cubs, who have just so many more question marks on the pitching side, that tips the scales for me. Because, like, do I trust the Cubs to discover outs more? Or do I trust the Brewers to discover runs more? If that makes sense. Like, those are the two weaker links, and I will side with the Brewers in that regard.
Yeah, Brandon Woodruff's the other name that has to be mentioned in terms of the Brewers rotation. And obviously, we don't want to expect too much from him after the long layoff, but clearly they are putting him back in the rotation. And, like, I feel like they're just going to ride. They're more likely to move Priester or Patrick into long relief than put Brandon Woodruff in the bullpen. So we'll see how that goes. Now that said, I do think that like the Cubs bullpen has been way better than people realize over the last little bit, but they still absolutely need a starter or two. All right, let's go over. Let's just stay in the National League. Let's do the National League East. So now this is a division race that I think we were much more excited about coming into the year, and it has mostly delivered. Now, I think we assumed it would be three teams. Instead, it is two teams and one team that is in absolute shambles, and the highlight of their season was the week where they got to host everybody. So we're not going to talk about the Braves here. We're going to talk about the Phillies and the Mets. And the Mets right now are just a half game back of the Phillies as we enter the second half. The run differentials are quite similar. I think the Phillies thing that I'm thinking about as we move forward is last year, it really all fell apart in the second half. Now, they still won the division, but I believe they were a 500 team after the break and did not have a lot of momentum going into the postseason, and that was obviously exposed fairly quickly. But the other thing that the Phillies did not really have to deal with last year, even as they played a lot worse after the break, was really any sort of real competition. I believe their division lead stayed above 4, 5, 6 games as poorly as they were playing. That does not seem likely to be the case this time around, and I'm curious if you think the Mets are going to pass them or at least make them sweat.
So I think they will make them sweat. The biggest surprise for either of these teams so far this year has been the Phillies' relative inability to hit the baseball over the fence. Because if you look at the names on this roster, Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Harper, et cetera, et cetera, Nick Castellanos, right, JT Realmuto, Trey Turner, these are players that you're like, oh, they hit a lot of home runs. And in years past, that's been the case. Do you know where the Phillies are ranking-wise in home runs this year in Major League Baseball?
18th? I don't know.
Wow. Yeah.
Did I nail it? Okay. I mean, you obviously led me towards not in the top half of the league, but I wasn't sure how far down to go. Okay.
18th. They are between the Reds and the Blue Jays. The Philadelphia Phillies have hit just 4 more home runs this year so far than the Cleveland Guardians.
Not good.
So that to me is a big surprise, right? That feels something that could turn around in the second half with a healthier Bryce Harper, with some more of their, you know, bottom of the lineup guys hitting the ball in the air. So the Mets offense, on the other hand, has benefited from Juan Soto being great for the last month and a half. But there are still reasons. Like, who do you think is a better offense over the rest of the year? Philly or New York?
That is a great question. And it's funny you mentioned the Mets offense, because in my head, too, the offense had started to pick it up over the last month as the pitching has regressed. But honestly, it's just been Juan Soto. Like, it's not, if you look at the full, like, offensive splits over the last few months, the pitching has been much worse and the hitting has been, like, okay. And Soto has just been on fire. So it's a great question. I think you can make a strong argument. I think that the Mets' offensive ceiling is higher. I still feel pretty good about that than the Phillies. But I'm not sure. I think you can make a strong case for both of them just because of some of the flaws that they have in the lineup. But I think I'll still go with the Mets.
Okay. And then from a pitching perspective, it has to be the Phillies, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's not really close. And I would say the other main dynamic with this team, and this is related, and of course, we're not going to do full deadline talk today, but like
these
two front offices and these two Pobos are likely to operate very differently ahead of the deadline. Now, I would love to be proven wrong, but if you're wondering which team is going to maybe include a top prospect quicker than the other, it's probably going to be Dave Dombrowski and not David Stearns. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the Mets are more in a mode where they're willing to push. But if I'm picking between the two, who's more likely to say, screw it, here's Aiden Miller? Like, it's probably Dave Dombrowski, right?
I think it's closer than you think for a couple reasons. So last year was really David Stearns' first deadline with the Mets. And it's easy to forget this now, but the Mets were not in it at the deadline, right? They were kind of on the fringes. And so he tried to do the middle ground, safe deadline strategy. He got Jesse Winker and Phil Maton and Ryan Stanek, right? But he didn't do anything to move the needle in a big way necessarily because they weren't that close at the time. I think that is not the case now, right? They are in it, very much so. The window is firmly open. Pete Alonso may be playing for another team next year. And anytime that you are in the mix and your team is good enough to win the World Series, I'm not saying Stearns is going to do anything outrageous, but he has a really strong farm system to trade from with a number of redundancies in it, right? They don't need Luis Angel Acuña and Brett Beatty and Mark Vientos and Ronnie Mauricio. You could totally understand him trading from that surplus and trying to get some bullpen help in return. As far as the Phillies go, I am fascinated to see what they do, whether they think this offense is good enough as it is or whether they need to add to it. The bullpen is going to get reinforcements. That is an absolute freaking duh. Dave Dombrowski is not going to ride into October with this current group. Let's switch gears from the American League, from the National League to the American League, and chat about the American League East. A division that for much of the first half looked not wrapped up, but as relatively settled. And then the Blue Jays were like, hold on, I'm going to win a bunch of baseball games. And the Yankees said, hold on, I'm going to lose a bunch of baseball games. And now we're in a place where the Blue Jays entered the break, 2 games up on the Yanks, with the Sox just 1 game behind New York after winning 10 straight, heading into the All-Star game. Jordan, what do you make of this division?
Yeah. So now the Rays also, now they finished the first half pretty cold, losing 8 of their last 10, but they were also right up in the mix. It looked like they were going to be the team that was going to be pushing the Yankees. I think the Red Sox W10 has really changed things. Seeing the Red Sox that close to the Yankees and knowing that the Blue Jays are ahead of them too, it's just really refreshing, because this is a division now where it was like, really, is this? This was, especially with how poorly the Orioles have been playing. I know they've been a little bit better recently. I would like this to be an entertaining situation. And the other interesting thing with the Blue Jays being 2 up is that, again, sorry to sound like Michael Kay, but the run differential does suggest that the Blue Jays are not as that much better than the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Rays, for that matter. This is not discounting the Blue Jays. If anything, it should be giving them credit for the fact that they are in first place by 2 games. But that's another reason where, again, if you bring back the dynamic of the deadline and you think about which of these teams is going to be feeling the most amount of urgency, I mean, sure, like Vlad Jr.'s extended, he's going to be there for the next decade no matter what, but you still feel like this is an opportunity for the Blue Jays. You know the Yankees at every deadline are going to be expected to do something, and then we know Boston is just the perpetual soap opera that they are, and also should be feeling the heat from a front office standpoint. And so Tampa, in theory, is the team that's probably chilling, because they're just in this really weird in-between season where they're playing pretty well, but we know they're about to spend much of the second half on the road. How is that going to impact them? Now, they, of course, have prospects to deal as well, but I'm not sure they're going to be the most aggressive of this bunch either, so they're probably just going to kind of float and see if they win or not. But yeah, those three other teams, I can't wait to see how this shakes out.
Because the pressure around Boston is that they, in the wake of trading Rafael Devers, said we're going to be aggressive and add at the deadline. Right now, they've said that full throttle before and didn't deliver. So don't be shocked if, you know, they talk the talk and don't walk the walk. And then for the Yankees and the Blue Jays, I do think it's a similar level of urgency. Both teams have players reaching free agency this year. I think that the pressure around, like, if the Yankees weren't the Yankees, I think the Blue Jays would have more pressure with Bassett and Bichette hitting free agency this year. But it's the Yankees are the Yankees, right? So it's like, if they don't win this division, we're going to have, should Anthony Volpe go to The Hague conversations all winter long. And that will dominate the discourse. Let's quickly do the American League wild card. Currently, the Yankees and Red Sox have those top two spots. Yankees, 1 game. Red Sox, 1 game. Mariners. The Mariners are 1.5 up on Tampa. 3.5 up on Texas. 4 up on LA and Minnesota. 4.5 on Kansas City and Cleveland. Who finishes in these three spots?
I think we're looking at the three teams. I think I'd still pick the, I don't know, man. The AL East is pretty difficult to pick at some point. I do think the Mariners are going to be one of those teams. Because of what I did, I know Tampa was my pick before the season to finish in that top spot, but I think with how much better the rest of the division is playing and with what they're going to have to deal with on the road the rest of the year, I'm a little skeptical they're going to be able to hang on. But I think these are the four teams we're really talking about. Maybe Texas has a late push, although I'm skeptical. The other thing I just have to say about Boston ahead of the deadline is, like, okay, sure, yeah, like, we're trading Devers. We still mean business. We still want to win. You still have a roster that is so crowded and so complicated and so kind of weird. No matter what lineup Alex Cora puts out there, everyone's like, well, why isn't he playing? It's like, this is still an issue. And in some ways, too many good players is a good problem to have. But also, they are kind of barreling towards a situation where they have to make another trade that's potentially extremely unpopular. Maybe they can just deal from the system and trade, you know, Franklin Arias or whatever and get pitching that way. But it's also not hard to imagine them trading Jarren Duran and having to deal with a whole another level of fan backlash, even though you can understand roster-wise why they would make that decision. So I don't know how Breslau is going to deal with this, but in theory, trading Devers would be the hardest thing he would have to do this year from a PR perspective. But I don't know, man. I feel like Boston could still be trying to maneuver some unpopular transactions at some point in the coming weeks. But I do think that these are the four teams we're talking about. I think Seattle. I think this is it. I think these are the three. The order, I have no idea, but I think Seattle, Boston, New York, Toronto, in some order.
So I think the Red Sox are going to find a way to win the division, pick them before the year. I think that their rotation being more settled somewhat now. Giolito getting his feet under him helps if they go out and they add a starting arm. Crochet is as bankable starter as it gets. Of these other teams, let's just say like Texas down, the team I believe the most in, weirdly enough, is Minnesota, even though I don't believe in them at all, if this makes sense. I just, they're the one that, if you look at the run differential, has played better than their record compared to these other teams. Yeah. You're making a face that says, Jake, shut up.
No, I think that that's, I mean, Texas and Kansas City are similar because they both have, I think they have the two lowest team ERAs in baseball, which is kind of amazing. But because the lineups have been so disappointing, despite some personnel that you would think would be scoring runs, it's just not happening. So that's like a bankable elite skill that those two teams have in the way that like the Angels hit homers, but it's not a good offense. The pitching is still not good. The Twins, I don't know. I guess their bullpen, the top of the bullpen is their elite skill, but it's not really that much of a strength. And Cleveland, I really don't know what they're especially good at this point. So I don't know. What?
Cleveland is good at having the easiest remaining strength of schedule in baseball. Does that matter? Maybe. It is. They have a 4.76 opponent winning percentage compared to the Red Sox, who are the third highest, have a 5.16 opponent winning percentage. Now, is that enough for Cleveland's poo-poo offense?
Here's the thing about Cleveland, and then we can move to the awards before we take a break, is to your point, it's coming up right here. And it's not just like the rest of the way, but this stretch, the remainder of July, will really determine, because while after that 10-game losing streak, it seemed like they were totally cooked, then they inexplicably go sweep the Astros in Houston, take 3 of 4 against the White Sox, and they finish the first half feeling a little bit better. Next four series, A's, Orioles, Royals, Rockies. So if they want to get back in theory, it's right there. It's right in front of them.
It's what?
It's right in front of them.
Steven Vogt went to the All-Star game. Talked to Aaron Boone, and Aaron Boone said, Steve, look at your schedule. It's right in front of you.
It's right in front of you. So, got this homestand. I'll be around them this upcoming week. A's and O's. We'll see how it goes. But I still think they are heading towards being sellers. We will see how dramatically that would be. Anything else on the AL Central, AL wildcard, or last thoughts on the NL wildcard before we move to awards?
Yeah, let's do that. We haven't done NL wildcard yet. So, right now, Brewers are up 4. They are up 4 games, okay, of safety. So that is 1.5 up on the Mets. The Mets are then, I believe, that is 2.5 up on the Padres. Padres are up 0.5 game on the Giants, 1.5 on the Cardinals, and 2.5 on the Reds. Then falls off Diamondbacks, Marlins, Braves. And eventually the Rockies are down there somewhere. Do the Brewers, Mets, and Padres finish in these spots?
By somewhere, you mean 30 games back. The Rockies are 30 games back of the third wild card at the break. Oh, my God. Okay, all right. Sorry, your question. Brewers, Mets, Padres. So, man, I have gone back and forth on the Padres and Giants all season, because again, we talk about sort of like those bankable skills, and the Padres do have an elite bullpen. They have two all-star starting pitchers in Logan Webb and Robbie Ray, and the lineup just isn't very good. And I think that Devers will heat back up and kind of give them another well above average bat. The Padres are so funny. Every year, it's like, man, they got some good players. And then sometimes you tune in, you're like, who's getting everyday at-bats for them? How is this possibly the plan? So Padres-Giants really does feel like a coin flip for me. I'll stick with San Diego just because I picked them before the season. And I got a Preller versus Buster Posey is a very interesting deadline storyline to watch. But yeah, I think these three are probably it. But maybe you have more faith in the Giants. I don't know.
Some of this is ballpark related, but these teams are 25th and 27th in slugging.
Ouch. Yeah. which again, like there's some big names on these teams and they are not hitting the ball over the fence. Should we take any of these other teams seriously? Cardinals and Reds, I mean, they're closer than some of those other AL teams we were talking about. Diamondbacks, this is last call for the Snakes here before they definitely turn into maybe the most interesting deadline seller that we have. They're 47 and 50. They're really running out of time. St. Louis, Cincinnati, I don't know. Cincinnati's kind of like Texas and Kansas City. Like they can pitch, but can they score? I'm not sure.
So the Cardinals are a fascinating team for the rest of the season for me because of the dynamic in the front office, right? So John Mozeliak, who is the president of baseball operations, this is his last year. And at the end of the season, he's handing the nuclear football over to Chaim Bloom to presumably institute a more modern style front office. Chaim is already doing some of that stuff behind the scenes in the minor league side. Okay. So it is the vibe at the deadline. This is Johnny Mo's last ride, baby. Let's give him a chance to go out in glory. Or is it, well, we got to hold these prospects because Chaim wants them for next year, understandably. And how that pans out, I think, is just a fascinating dynamic.
Yeah, well, but to your point, it's like go out with glory. Like, what is the ceiling for this team realistically? I mean, they clearly don't suck, but it's not like this isn't a roster that you're just saying, screw it. You know, JJ Weatherholt's out the door. We're going all in. We're bringing Sandy Alcantara back. It's like, no, that's obviously not happening.
No, but I think the value of a playoff home game for this Cardinals team is pretty high considering the way that attendance has been trending in St. Louis and there's a lack of excitement around the team like over the last couple of years compared to where it was for a long, long time. I think that does mean something. But as long as it means something to the dude with his finger on the trigger, like that's what's important. Like John Mozeliak could just be like, screw this. Like every prospect from 7 to 23, thanks for showing up.
Yeah, I doubt it. And like what you just described, I get it. We're not talking about, you know, World Series contenders all in, but even a playoff home game still feels pretty optimistic. I mean,
I agree.
That requires them to, you know, that's either win a round on the road or get out past the Brewers and Mets. So anyway, I hear what you're saying. I think they're just going to end up doing, yeah.
Last year, about the Mets. This happens every year. There's a team that's like, they're never going to make the playoffs. Now, I understand, yeah, the Mets is a different roster. There are parts of the Cardinals roster. There's a lower ceiling. I understand all that. But what I'm saying is, as long as you're in the mix, as long as you can dream on something, it's going to influence decision-making, I think.
Yeah, that is totally valid. All right, we spent more time on the races, and this is what I'm more interested in. I mean, awards are a little bit more at this point. You know, we've talked about the ones that are the most compelling. Obviously, AL MVP is the headliner. I think Cy Young is also interesting, certainly on the NL side. Besides Judge versus Cal Raleigh, which is indisputably one of the biggest stories of the second half, are there any other ones that particularly catch your attention?
So I think they're all interesting, right? I think Ohtani pitching again and hitting same time makes him a runaway favorite on the NL side. I'm fascinated to see who finishes second in the National League behind Ohtani. There's no obvious runner-up. Can PCA keep this going? Does Juan Soto continue to stay hot? Does Kyle Tucker kind of dive into what he was doing in April? Is James Wood in the mix? Like, second place in the NL, I find interesting. Hopping over to the NL Cy Young, I'm fascinated by that. I think this is the closest race between Paul Skenes on the Pirates and Zach Wheeler on the Phillies. And in the end, I think it is close enough between Wheeler and Skenes that the voters in the end just go, well, you know what? Zach Wheeler's 35 and he doesn't have a Cy Young and Paul Skenes is going to be doing this for another 10 years. And we're splitting hairs and Wheeler has more innings. Zach Wheeler, you're the Cy Young.
I totally agree. I think as it stands now in the AL, obviously Skubal has a pretty comfortable lead, but it's not like Crochet is that far behind him. You know, Skubal's one bad start from that being a little bit closer than I think you're maybe giving him credit for, but I agree that Wheeler's Skenes is more compelling. Yeah.
it is much closer than you think. So
yeah,
if you just look at the stats, they have identical ERAs. Kershaw has more innings, more strikeouts than Skubal. Now, Skubal has one fewer start and essentially half the walks. And that is the biggest separator, is that Kershaw walks a lot more people. Now, I think Skubal has the edge right now because he's leading in walk rate and strikeout rate, which is just an outrageous thing to be doing. I think you're right that if Kershaw has this, just like keeps staying hot and Skubal doesn't, in our minds, like this year is Tarek Skubal is the best pitcher on the planet. And that is true. But when the numbers match up at the end of the year, they're going to be closer than people think, which is a credit to Kershaw.
Yeah. No, I love that, that as I think I referenced it recently, you know, Passan saying that like these are the four, whatever, the Mount Rushmore of current pitching. It does feel that way. And to have two in each league, to have those two, and there are a bunch of other pitchers having great seasons, but it feels like these four have really separated themselves. And that should make the remainder of the season quite compelling, although I am compelled to mention Jacob DeGrom. Just saying the name, just putting out there. There's totally a world where he has like a 170 ERA at the end of the season and is at least in the discussion. I don't think he's going to have nearly as many innings, but he's not as far behind as you would assume. As for the rookie of the year, NL, I think, is still up in the air. I don't think Mizorowski is a runaway favorite, although it feels like it because he is an all-star and is now suddenly very famous. I think both of the catchers, Drake Baldwin and Agustin Ramirez, are going to have the counting stats and are also well-deserving. And then the AL, I think, is really compelling. I'm excited to see Jacob Wilson. I know we just saw Jacob Wilson on the podcast and at All-Star, but the fact that the A's have two hitters who are right there in Jacob Wilson and Nick Kurtz, and then Cam Smith, who's really been turning it on, I think with Houston right now, with the injuries to Yordan, injuries to Pena, injuries to Jake Myers, like, Cam Smith's really kind of being thrust into the spotlight and he's really showing up. So I think this one is totally open. I think Roman Anthony has a real chance. I think if he's going to continue hitting third for a team that's pushing for the AL East or hitting second or third and he's hitting like he's hitting, sure. I mean, obviously he was, it was a little bit of a late start, but both of these rookie of the year races, I still feel like are pretty open. But yeah, if Jacob Wilson finishes the year hitting 340, he's probably going to be tough to beat. But any sort of regression there, I think it's going to end up being pretty close.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll tell you everything that Rob Manfred said and more. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Rob Manfred, the commish, spoke at All-Star. There were some interesting nuggets out of that. Let's go around the league. So I actually want to begin here with a conversation that we had recently on the pod about Rob Manfred. Has he ever, like, when's the last time he threw a baseball? Right? What are his baseball yeah. skills like? I got a text from friend of the show and former college teammate, Mr. Beef. And Mr. Beef said the following thing, Jordan. Ready? Quote, you guys were saying on the pod last week that you've never seen Manfred throw a ball or swing a bat. And I got to thinking, the commissioner should just be the best player, right? Who better to steer the game than the person who obviously knows and plays the game the best? That position would come with zero business legal marketing training. You just throw Aaron Judge in there and see what he does. This is such a hilarious idea. Very Viking, right? Biggest, biggest lad. Runs society. I think this is a great idea. If you won the preceding year MVP, you run the sport.
Well, okay, well, we got two of those MVPs. Are we having Judge and Otani just kind of
co-reign
the commish? Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure which of those guys is more qualified or would be more interested in taking that on. I would feel a little bit better about, you know, the upcoming labor negotiations, I think. But other than that,
if it was
I'm not so sure.
Tony Clark. Yeah.
I think they'd be on the same page. I'm not so sure that is the best option. So anyway, Rob Manfred, who is the commissioner, regardless of how hard he can throw the ball or how hard he can hit the ball or whatever, or what his average sprint speed is. Rob Manfred is
velocity.
In charge of this here league. And he does an annual annual. He does like a couple times a year. He addresses the media and answers a bunch of questions. So he spoke about a few pieces of news. Some news. This is some things that are clearly happening right now. Some things that could be happening soon. And then one massive topic that we definitely want to at least dig into a little bit, which is the Olympics in 2028. But let's begin with the actual news that seems to be very much approaching, which is the sale of the Tampa Bay Rays. Now, this is something that has sort of been trickling out over the last few weeks. And the Rays have become a, unfortunately, an interesting story this year because of things that were completely out of their control, which is, of course, the hurricane damaging their stadium and making it unusable for the 2025 season. But there were already a lot. There was already a lot going on with this ownership group and this franchise in terms of staying in Tampa, staying in St. Petersburg. Where were they going to be long term? All this ridiculous plan to split time in Montreal. And it does seem like the conclusion of this weird saga, which has, of course, been impacted by the stadium situation, is that Stu Sternberg will be selling the Rays for roughly $1.7 billion to a group led by Jacksonville real estate developer Patrick Zalupski. Hope I'm saying that right. Patty Z. I'm sure that's what his friends call him. This is a really rich guy from Jacksonville who is not, I think he's like in his mid-40s. This is not some super old, oil baron. This guy's a younger dude who is going to buy the Rays and by all indications would like them to be in Tampa. This is an interesting bit of information, and how this will impact them, how quickly, I think is interesting, but the Rays are a team that I know the league wants to get their situation settled in the way that the league feels like they have settled the A's before they explore expansion. Figuring out what is going on with the Rays is a big part of it. So this is important.
Congratulations to Patty Z. Patty Z,
yeah.
You did it, man. You bought the team. Patty Z, who has his own Twitter. Okay.
Oh,
so that's great. Didn't we got more owners on the Twit. Patty Z has 376 followers. So everyone listening, go throw my man Patty Z, new owner of the Rays, a follow, like, and subscribe to Patty Z. Joining Patty Z on this group will be Bill Cosgrove and Ken Babby. I really hope it's Ken Baby. That would be great.
Yeah.
Ken Baby currently owns the Akron Rubber Ducks and the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. So, who better to take over the Rays? $1.7 billion is the price here. There's been pressure for Stu Sternberg to sell just because he was unable to remedy the stadium situation down there in St. Petersburg. And the hurricane had a far greater impact than the baseball team. However, that hurricane, those hurricanes, drastically reoriented the trajectory of this franchise because there was a deal in place to build a new stadium in St. Petersburg before the hurricane kind of re-embroiled the relationship between Sternberg and local government. And because that relationship totally fell apart, Sternberg's pressure to sell, Patty Z, Bill C, and Ken the Baby are going to take over this club now, probably at some point in September. The one other Rays-related nugget is that they're going to play at Steinbrenner for the playoffs if they get there. Now, will they get there? We don't think so. Certainly in play, certainly a chance. There is a legitimate argument to not play the home games at Steinbrenner just because it is a small venue and the idea of having a World Series there would be very embarrassing. Not embarrassing, but it'd just be like a weird look and an odd experience. But at the end of the day, the players are the ones, to my understanding, the players would prefer to do playoffs at Steinbrenner because they're familiar with it now and it is preferable to like going to Texas or Miami to do this. Now, the playoff shares would be smaller, probably because there'd be fewer gate receipts and fewer concessions, et cetera, et cetera. But this does feel like an important announcement to try kind of get that settled. Now, the Rays weren't the only team that we had sale buzz about, as the Minnesota Twinkies have been on the market kind of for some time. Run us through this situation.
Yeah, no, they've been on the market And again, this was a situation where we thought they were about to be sold to Justin Ishbia over the offseason before Justin Ishbia was like, ooh, you know what? I think I'd rather have the White Sox, which again is kind of a tough look for the Twins, all things considered. But that certainly derailed the process to some degree. But it does seem like the Twins are still going to find a new owner soon. Of course, the Pollad family has owned them for quite a while. I will say before we get to this amusing quote from the commissioner, this also sounds like it's heading towards, I believe the franchise was valued at $1.7 billion. That is also roughly what the Orioles were sold for and what the Rays were sold for. So it sounds like $1.7 billion if we're going for a smaller market team. That's, I mean, if we, now we know. Now we know what we got to scrounge together.
Go fund
if
us.
We wanna, you know, let's make it happen. We know what the target is here is 1.7. But this quote from Manfred is great. I love this so much. He said, quote, I know some things that you don't know. I can tell you with a lot of confidence that there will be a transaction there and it will be consistent with the kind of pricing that has taken place. $1.7 billion. There will be a transaction. We just need to be patient while they rework. So, and then he continues, this is really where he, again, because people are like, come on, dude, like, when he says, I know some things you don't know, it's like, yeah, that's why we're having this press conference, so you can tell us those things. But anyway, Manfred continues, he says, you know, this is a small business, right? Now, I think what he means is like small industry, because of what he goes on to keep saying. But anyway, he continues, he says, all those bankers that are out there, there ain't that many of them. They all talk to each other when it becomes clear you have a leader in the clubhouse. Everybody else kind of backs away because they kind of get a feel for the price. And unless they're prepared to top, they're going to move on and do something else. So a big part of the delay in Minnesota was associated with the leader in the clubhouse made a decision to do something else, which, if I'm not completely misunderstanding, was Justin Ishbia, unless this has now happened again internally where someone else was trying to buy the Twins and then change their mind. So that seems to be what he's referring to. But as he said, there will be a transaction. So it'll happen at some point. And it is frustrating, though, because if you're a Twins fan and you've already been in this holding pattern and you thought you were about to kind of enter the season with a vision for where this franchise was going under new leadership, you didn't get that. And now you've been kind of floating in the middle for the second straight year. It sucks that it's kind of, this might end up being another kind of wash of a season, especially disappointing when you have Byron Buxton playing this way. So I'm sure it's a little disappointing, but I know Twins fans will probably be happy to find out at some point who their new owner is.
The rivalry now between the Twins and the White Sox. Whew. Twins fans, Ishbia didn't want us. All right. He didn't like us. He made us wait for a new owner. Boo, Justin Ishbia. The last main thing that Rob Manfred talked about, I mean, there was salary cap, lockout stuff. The vibe around CBA negotiations right now is just like so no bueno. And we can talk about it in the winter when there's nothing else to talk about. But let's do the Olympics, because the Olympics are headed to LA in 2028. And for the first time, big leaguers really want to play in the Olympics because it is here in America. In 2020/21, when it was in Tokyo, there was baseball. It was not, like, it was a bizarre year for baseball in the Olympics because of the pandemic and the way that kind of restructured everything, but there were no big league players participating in that. Big league players have never participated in the Olympics. Most famously in 2000, you had baseball in Australia with like the Roy Oswalt, Ben Sheets team, right? That's a very famous Olympics baseball team if you're a nerd like us. But the big leaguers want to play, all right? Now, the problem is it's right smack dab in the middle of the season. And MLB, understandably, doesn't want to take a long break to leave all that money on the table.
That said, this is still a situation where you can imagine Rob Manfred. And remember, as we understand, this will be nearing the end of Rob Manfred's tenure, where he has basically said this will be, I think, stepping down after 2028 or in 2029. So this is like the last big thing for him to really figure out, right? We've mentioned expansion. We know we're going to have this next CBA. But the Olympics is a huge thing. And so this quote is interesting. This is in relation to the schedule for the Olympics that they have already, you know, put out, because it's the Olympics and they planned this many, many years in advance. Quote, they put out a schedule. They tell you it's not going to move. We'll see whether there's any movement on that. It is an opportunity to market the game on a real global stage. We're trying to iron through those logistics. So this is in some ways a nothing quote, but also like kind of gives you a window into how the commissioner is viewing this, which is basically he seems to be taking the line of, all right, they say he's not going to move, but like we're Major League Baseball and these Olympics are in the United States. Hopefully they can work with us to make this work in some form. But at the end of the day, like this is still going to come down to more about what the MLB owners are going to be willing to sacrifice, because that is, no matter what schedule you put together, that is going to be required in some form. And I hope that's what happens, because it would be really cool. But I have no clue. There's so many things that are going to happen between now and then that are going to dictate how likely it is. So it's kind of hard to talk about too seriously, but it is certainly a huge baseball storyline to watch as that those Olympics approach.
If there was no CBA negotiation between now and the Olympics, I would feel significantly more confident about this getting done. Because this is going to take a significant amount of work and schedule restructuring and negotiation between players and the league and like NBC, who has the broadcast rights, and the Olympics, it's an enormous thing to try and settle. And there are simply going to be other things on the checklist between now and then. The other dynamic that's important to understand here is that MLB needs the Olympics more than the Olympics needs MLB, right? People are tuning in to watch the, you know, Latvian long jumper or the Belarusian gymnast or the Ghanaian canoer, no matter what. Now, baseball single-handedly is not going to tip the scales of the ratings significantly enough. The Olympics are doing okay. This is an opportunity for baseball to like kind of hop into that energy and promote the game on a global scale, which Manfred said and he understands. I think everybody here ideologically is in alignment. How we get from here to there, I mean, it's going to be a fascinating journey that's definitely going to take some time. Anything else from All-Star Week? I think that there was some discourse in the wake of the swing-off about, should we have swing-offs in regular games during the regular season to determine tiebreakers? Right now, I am so vehemently opposed to that idea. I think it is very silly. I don't think the swing-off was awesome, okay? Just because something is awesome doesn't mean we should copy and paste it, use it all the time, and devalue the uniqueness of that situation. That's where I stand on that.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I kind of said that even just in relation to how we would treat the All-Star game and whether we would force it into the All-Star game, no matter what the circumstance was. But of course, it expands beyond that. It's like, oh, screw extra innings. We never want to do that again. I don't know. I'm not going to say it's never going to happen, because baseball has changed a lot in the last few years. But I don't think that people are asking for this. And I don't really know if that's really solving a problem that exists right now. I think extra innings, you've already changed them a lot, and you've shortened games, and games are not going 17 innings anymore. And so you've already addressed that problem. Some people like it, some people don't. I think now we really are changing like how baseball is played and how game wins and losses are determined. That is a massive leap to a huge change in the way that wins and losses are determined that I do not think should just be taken lightly. And so we loved the swing off, but we don't think that's coming anytime soon. Now, what is coming soon, almost certainly, is the ABS challenge system, which we did not talk a lot about in our All-Star recap, but is something that we saw a handful of times during the All-Star game. We, of course, saw in spring training what this would look like. We saw it in the Futures game. We've seen it in the minor leagues. Having seen it, this is the biggest stage. Again, it was there for all of spring training, but I'm sure there are hundreds of thousands of people that were exposed to this for the first time. I'm sure in the stadium, there were plenty of people that were exposed to it for the first time. in the All-Star game. We've already talked about it plenty. We talked about it in spring. Has your stance on ABS changed at all now seeing it really in the highest profile moment?
Yeah, I'm a little lower on it than I thought. I do think it kind of breaks up the flow of the game. I know it doesn't take that long, but it takes a little longer, I think, than I expected in that setting. Maybe it'll change and get better over time. The conversation about there potentially being a buffer zone, I really don't understand that at all. The way that we have replay in professional sports and all sports, there is a line, whether that is the end back of the end zone or the baseline or the goal crease, what have you, the lines in tennis. Like, if any part of the ball is touching the line, it's a strike, right? If it doesn't touch the line, it's a ball. There has to be a border, a firm border somewhere. That's just standard across sports. I was a little confused why people were so like vehemently pounding the table. Does it look a little silly when it just nips the edge? Yeah, sure. But it's also a little silly when a dude's foot is just barely over the line on a touchdown catch.
Yeah, and also like that's still the point. You have an objective way that's measuring that it's a strike, and I promise you that those ones that are touching the zone are still going to end up being better calls than some of the ones that are missed. And so I think that's why, for the most part, like I've been surprised. Like I feel like most people, it was received pretty positively from what I saw online, from what I saw from players. Like there are still people and managers in the game who are not totally ready for this, and I maintain that we will not really understand how this will impact it until even the regular season next year, if it does get implemented, because I don't think spring training is going to be the proper way for us to understand what this means from a competitive standpoint. But at this point, I've accepted that it's coming. And if it comes next year, it is another huge change to our sport, but it's one that I think is welcome. And in some ways is just kind of catching up with a lot of other sports. And in some ways just replay in general, right? We were going for a long time without overturning extremely obvious calls on the field. And so now if that's going to be a vehicle for us to do that with balls and strikes, it is definitely a change in the way we watch it. But I think I'm mostly in favor.
All right, let's take a break. When we good back, we will bad ugla after break good ugla back. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's hop right into it. The good, the bad, and the ugly. One thing good, one thing bad, one thing that reminds us of Dan Ugla from the week that was. No Dan Ugla in Atlanta this weekend. I didn't see him anywhere. Did you?
I didn't. And if he was there and we were not alerted, that is a failure on everybody else's part. But let us get to it. Let us start with something good. I am going to start with a tweet from our pal Brent Rooker, who I'm looking forward to seeing again here as the A's visit Cleveland. This tweet gave me so much joy. Brent, of course, tweets a fair bit and has had some funny interactions over the last couple of weeks. I know we had a funny back and forth with Jeff Passan, but this one absolutely killed me. So one of the things that happens on baseball Twitter is, you know, there's hitting Twitter, right? There's like hitting gurus and guys who want to super overanalyze every swing, and you're getting slow-mo open side. Listen, you could learn a lot from these accounts, and it is an interesting kind of platform for discourse and hitters, especially people like Brent Rooker, who are very open on social media about explaining their thought process and explaining their mechanics. And so this account, Baseball Unstitched Podcast, quote tweeted a slow-mo of Brent Rooker's home run swing from the All-Star game. And he said, "Where in this do you personally make your swing decision, Brent Rooker? Curious other thoughts as well. Where do you think Rook made his decision to swing?" And so this is kind of getting at the concept of like, again, like when you can kind of tell if you're watching super slow, when in the kinetic chain is he firing his hands and all these things and he's processing the pitch. And Brent Rooker responded and he said, "It was a 2-0 count in the All-Star game. My swing decision was made immediately after taking ball two." Which is so great. He's like, friends, mechanics, they don't matter here. It's the All-Star game. It's 2-0. I'm assuming I'm getting a heater. I'm going to swing as hard as I can. And he had a home run. I love it.
Regular season baseball is hyper-analyzed. And players are like locked in and thinking all the time. And they're like making these decisions. Brent Rooker's like, brother, I'm in the All-Star game. Okay. It does not matter. I'm sitting dead red on a heater and I do not give a crap. And he got it. And that's what you do with it.
So good. All right. What's your good?
Jacob Mizorowski threw a 98 mile an hour slider in the All-Star game. The pitch itself was a ball scrub. Mm. But what was great about this is that the reaction from the dugouts was so genuine. Remember, Mizorowski's showing up at the All-Star game with this cloud of does he deserve to be there hanging over his head. It's one of the narratives of the entire event. He goes out there and throws a 98 mile an hour slider, and that pitch was enough to make both dugouts cackle and giggle with disbelief. And I think these dudes seeing him exist in person, remember, these are some of the best athletes in the world, the best baseball players in the world. Some guys who throw 100, who hit the ball 450 feet. And they saw Jacob Mizorowski throw a 98 mile an hour slider, and they were laughing.
Yeah, even Trevor McGill, his teammate, was like, you know, cracking up because he's probably like, guys, get a load of this. I know this sounds crazy, but this dude, this skinny guy from Missouri is about to throw a 98 mile an hour slider. And everyone else is like, he's going to do what? And yeah, he was only up to 102. A little disappointed that he wasn't throwing 109 like everyone promised me. But it was still very cool. And I agree. That was a very genuine reaction.
What do you got for Beth?
This is very straightforward, and this is not, you know, sometimes I'm doing bad that I'm making fun of it. No, this is bad. This is Ketel Marte was robbed during the All-Star break. His home was burglarized while he was away in Atlanta, and I'm bringing this up as bad because not only is it obviously bad for big leaguers to have their extremely valuable possessions stolen from them, but that this is something of a trend. Julio Rodriguez and Luis Castillo were also burglarized their homes in the Pacific Northwest earlier this season. And the stories about that, and I believe in one of those cases, Julio's girlfriend was in the house when it happened. And that just seemed like a terrifying situation. And yeah, I this is disturbing that this is a thing that is happening to major leaguers who are obviously have these nice houses and a lot of valuable possessions. And I've seen way too many stories like this and hope that these big leaguers can find a way for this to not happen anymore. Cause I'm shocked that this is happening as often as it is, but that's just me not understanding that people are coming after people with money. Of course.
Don't rob people.
Yeah. Good point. What's bad for you?
Thanks, man. The Mets this weekend plan to retire the uniform of one Mr. David Wright. That is not bad. David Wright is good. In fact, David Wright's final game, we were at it, and it was one of the most memorable regular season ball games I've ever attended. We went with friend of the program, Scott Rogowski, and booed Peter O'Brien as he caught the pop-up in foul territory in Wright's last at-bat. Okay, so they're honoring Wright this weekend. That's good. Why is this your bad, Jake? Well, it appears that the New York Mets, or someone at Major League Baseball, published a video, a hype reel, of David Wright, a couple of the other Mets captains from franchise history, John Franco, Keith Hernandez, and then had some clips of Francisco Lindor doing a bunch of cool stuff. And then it was taken down. There's been a lot of hubbub, a lot of chatter. Should Lindor be the Mets captain? Would that be insulting to Brandon Nimmo, to Pete Alonso? Someone was like, that'd be insulting to Juan Soto. Don't worry, that's not the problem. This is bad, man, because either this video is like the most bizarre tease ever, or they're making Lindor the captain this weekend and they, you know, accidentally leaked it early, right?
Yeah, and like, what a screw up, because like, what a reveal that could have been. And maybe still will be. Oh. I mean, it could still be cool. And if this happens over the weekend, we'll talk about it on Monday. But I mean, when we talked about the Mets captainship earlier this year, I was really intrigued by it. The fact that there is kind of split camp on who it should be. And the fact that Brandon Nimmo seems to have strong opinions about it. Like, all of those things are interesting. And if they had, if part of this David Wright thing was to make Lindor the captain, I think it would have taken people by surprise. Of course, it would have been like, duh, but it would have been a hell of a reveal. And now we're kind of like expecting it, but not expecting it. Like, now are they going to have to pretend like they weren't going to do it and do it in a few months? I don't know. This is very strange, but I agree that it qualifies as bad for it being online for any reason.
So I don't know whose fault this is. This could be someone at MLB. This could also be someone with the Mets. Either way, it is old school Mets mess up. Like, this is a Wilpon era vibe type move. I have made the point many times that the Wilpon era officially ended the second Jorge Lopez threw his glove up into the air. That, like, the messiness of it all, the embarrassment that just was behind every corner at Citi Field and Shea Stadium was over, and that Steve Cohen changed things. This is something of a relic, this move here. Don't upload videos that aren't supposed to be uploaded yet.
The grand finale. All right, well, we'll find out on Saturday in some form. That will be interesting. All right, my ugla this week is Cal Raleigh endorsing a porta potty. Oh, baby. So Cal Raleigh has had quite the week, and he has teamed up with Honey Bucket, a porta potty company. I believe it is Pacific Northwest based. And a couple ugly things about this. So, other than the obvious, I think the number one thing is the timing here is kind of spectacular. And the fact that they have this photo of him and this video clip of him coming out of the porta potty being like, yo, these porta potties are the best. I'm Big Dumper. They dropped this, I think, the day of the All-Star game. And I just would love to know when this was filmed. Like, did this really all work out that perfectly? Did they know they were going to announce it at some point this summer? And he suddenly has this unbelievable week where it, like, I just want to know the timing of this. Now, clearly he has earned this porta potty endorsement before the home run derby and before he had 38 home runs at the break. Like, he earned this with his homer in 2022 and being named Big Dumper. They could have given this to him 2 years ago. But I just have to imagine that the marketing team at Honey Bucket must just be over the moon right now. I mean, they must just feel like this could not be going any better to attach ourselves to this ascendant major league star whose nickname has to do with his butt and dumping, sort of. And I love it. I love it. Porta potties are always funny. Porta potty names are always funny. We have a local one near we grew up, Bobby's Potties, that my younger brother once screamed, "I love Bobby's Potties," over a cliff in San Diego. It was because we told him to, because he was like eight and we thought it was funny. So Bobby's Potties, Don's, John's, Honey Bucket is kind of a weird name. I know it's like a name for strange. It's like, that's not what I think a Honey Bucket is. It's kind of, Honey Bucket sounds like something delicious, not a porta potty. Anyway, the point is, porta potties are funny. Cal Raleigh's awesome. I love that he's doing this. He doesn't need the money. He just signed a $100 million extension, and I love it. So go, Cal Raleigh, go.
Very NIL coded. It's like Cal Raleigh wins the home run derby, and he's like, "Did I mention Honey Bucket?" Other thing, the hat he's wearing in this photo, I need it. I need it yesterday. The Honey Bucket lid.
I look forward to talking to Cal Raleigh about porta potties at some point in the second half. All right, Jake, what's your ugla before we say goodbye?
This is a tweet it's a TikTok. You know, people tweet TikToks, whatever. Mm-hmm. It is a video of Mets draft selection Zach Mack, who during the draft, this is a fascinating video, during the draft was playing MLB The Show in what appears to be a dorm room type situation. Maybe it's his childhood bedroom, in which case, my apologies. He's playing MLB The Show. He's got the MLB draft tracker up on the side. He has a variety of different colored jars on the desk that I can't deduce. Milk and pumpkin soup, maybe, and carrot juice, whatever. Now, this is fun, right? Zach Mack, he's got the draft track up. He's playing MLB The Show. But what I like the most about this, Zach Mack, who went in the 16th round to the Mets, I believe, out of Loyola Marymount. His middle name is Jackson. This is Zach Jack Mack. Zach Jack Mack. Welcome to the Mets. I've never wanted a big leaguer, a guy to be a big leaguer so bad. Dude, do you know where he played before he was at Loyola Marymount?
Oh, yeah, I do. I did before Loyola Marymount, yes. Where did he play?
He was at San Jack. Zach Jack Mack was at San Jack.
Yes, so San Jacinto Junior College, one of the more prominent junior college programs. He transferred to LMU. And yeah, this TikTok, which appears to be from his girlfriend, the caption is, your boyfriend, POV, your boyfriend could possibly get drafted into the MLB and he's casually playing out with the show. It's so funny. This is everything about this. But I agree. I would love to know more about the jars on the table. So I don't think Zach Mack is going to get Zach Jack Mack.
Full name.
I don't think he's going to get like a full intro presser at Citi Field the way that I guess like Mitch Voit, right? He
today.
Might get
He'll be there
at
today,
some point
Mitch
here
Voit.
Today. Okay. So I don't know if Zach Jack Mack is going to get that, but hopefully, spring training next year, when you're stopping by Mets backfields, you see the name, you see Zach Jack Mack, you just be like, hey, I gotta ask you, congrats, first spring training. Really important question. What was in
those? In those jars?
What is going on with those jars, Zach Jack Mack? All right. Anyway, Zach Jack Mack. We love it. All
coming
right.
in from the bullpen for the Mets. Zach. Jack.
Zach Jack Mack. All right. That is our show. We have, baseball's back, baby. Baseball's back, Zach Jack Mack, baby. And we are going to be watching it this weekend. We've got Mike Trout in Philly. We've got the Astros and Mariners. We'll be watching that. Brewers-Dodgers is spicy. Okay, Brewers, let's see if you can stay hot. And then, of course, Red Sox-Cubs. Oh, my gosh. Remember, Red Sox on this W10. Can they carry that into Wrigley Field? Justin Verlander trying to get that first elusive win tonight in Canada. We will see how that goes. And the Yankees are in Atlanta. So Aaron Judge, I don't know why you had to leave early on Tuesday night. You were going to be in Atlanta anyway, but we'll have the Yankees in Atlanta. Yankees-Braves should be interesting. One more tease, but Jake, anything else on the weekend?
No.
All right. Well, folks, now is a good time to mention we will be doing a live trade deadline show. You can watch live stream 5:30 Eastern leading up to the 6 p.m. deadline on July 31st. Reacting to all the trades that happen. Maybe we will have some happen. Maybe we will have a buzzer beater as we have had in years past and we will react to it live. So get ready for that. We are very excited for it. But until then, thank you to producers TJ Brassel and Andrew Hartz for making this show possible. Jake Mintz, final thoughts.
Well, the number one question that I get is, are you ever going to do your trade deadline reveal show again? And the answer to that is usually no, because my editor understandably wants me, the professional baseball writer, to write about professional baseball trades during the trade deadline. And in order to write about them, I have to know that they're happening. But maybe this year with the live show, maybe you just take some of the heat that day and I go dark for that day and we can do it on the live show. I think it's worth discussing. That's all I'm going to say. Because people love it.
Yes. There is some logistics we certainly are going to be working out, especially with you moving. So this is going to be an interesting week, but we are so excited for the trade deadline, if you cannot tell. But baseball's back. Zach Jack Mack. And we will talk to you on Monday. Bye-bye.